Hello, here's your KVNF regional newscast for Monday, March 19th. A bill to make Colorado's public pension system more sustainable is beginning to make its way through the state legislature. The proposal is starting in the Republican-controlled Senate and will need bipartisan support to pass the state house. Benta Berkland talked to reporters about some of the key points in our weekly Capitol conversation.
We're joined by Brian Eason with the Denver Post and Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal. Brian, you've been covering this issue closely, and a bill's been introduced to reform public employee pensions. Talk about some of the key issues lawmakers will be debating as this moves through the state house.
From the outset, even the sponsors of this bill acknowledge that it's going to change before it gets passed. I mean, you had lawmakers just openly admitting this thing does not have the votes to pass the House of Representatives right now. So some of the key things that you're going to see people trying to change over the coming weeks are, number one, it offers an option for folks to get into a 401k-like plan. Currently, some state employees do have that option, but this would expand it to all para members who are hired after 2020. Another issue is just how deep these cuts are going to be. You know, retirees already feel like they've given up a lot of money over the last 7 years since the last reform effort. They're going to be asked to sacrifice even more. Employees are going to be asked to chip in more into the fund, and the government's going to be asked to chip in more. And at this point, there's really not a broad consensus on how much money each side is going to have to give up in this fight.
Brian alluded to some of the political difficulties here. We have a Republican-controlled Senate, a Democratic-controlled House, yet there's a lot of outstanding issues and areas of disagreement.
Yeah, I mean, and the difficulties go beyond political. For example, during the first hearing, Power's interim director brought up the idea that one of the changes is essentially pushing up the retirement age to usually about 65 for employees who are currently in the system who are under the age of 46. He said, look, that's going to get us sued, and it's probably going to be found to be unconstitutional because it's a violation of the contract clause. So you have Republicans who really want to push this 401k plan. You have Democrats who really want to protect employee contributions. And you have a lot of people who are invested in this who say this is getting into areas that it shouldn't get into. So you've got partisan difficulties. You've got difficulties, you know, another thing, school boards are involved in the PARA plan. Denver's superintendent came out and said, look, this is going to cost us $55 million if we have to up the amount of contributions we have. That's essentially 700 teacher jobs. Where do you want us to cut the money from? These are the kind of things they're wrestling with in this issue.
What makes this juncture so critical for PARA? And then talk about how many people are part of this public employee pension system.
There's about 1 in 10 Coloradans that are a member of PARA in some form, whether they've just been an employee for a few years or if they're a lifelong employee or if they're already retired. It's 560,000 people, so this has serious impact on folks' lives. Politicians generally would love to just not deal with stuff right away, right? We'd love to kick the can down the road, let somebody else deal with the problem. Here's the thing, though. It's like not paying any other debts that you have. The longer you hold off on paying your credit card bill, your mortgage, your student loans, whatever, the more it's going to cost if you try to fix it tomorrow. So there is really a lot of pressure from employees, from conservatives, from the PARA board, both parties. People do see the urgency of getting this done this year, no matter how complicated the politics are.
This is why I think it goes beyond just a state employee issue and why you see business groups like the Metro Denver Economic Development Corporation getting involved in this. PARA produces about $4 billion toward the economy every year. If some of those benefits start wavering, small communities essentially are in trouble with what people can spend down there. The need to fill this unfunded liability is taking money away from transportation and education. People are getting tired of the state not spending in those areas. While ostensibly this is a problem with the state's public pension system, this is everyone's problem.
Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal and Brian Eason with the Denver Post. I'm Benta Berkland, and this is Capital Conversation.
Snowpack that feeds the Colorado River continues to run low in the southern Rocky Mountains, leading to a whole range of concerns for the rest of the year in the West. Luke Runyon has more.
I'm just off the highway in southwestern Colorado's San Juan Mountains, where it's currently snowing, but for much of the winter, it just hasn't. Jeff Derry is the director of the Center for Snow and Avalanche Studies in nearby Silverton. He says snow totals range from 45 to 60% of normal.
A lot of people have a disconnect when they turn their tap on as to where the water's coming from. And the water comes from the mountains and starts here in the mountains in the form of snow.
Low snowpack means low water levels in streams this spring. Dry conditions could also lead to more damaging wildfires and force kayakers and rafters to shorten their seasons. I'm Luke Runyon in San Juan National Forest.
Many teenagers in Colorado are taking up smoking with vaporizers, or vaping. New research shows that vaping isn't a harmless alternative to traditional cigarettes, especially for teens. Eric Galatis has the story.
An increasing number of teens in Colorado and across the U.S. are drawn to electronic cigarettes with such flavors as watermelon and cotton candy. But new research says vaping produces toxic chemicals even when there's no nicotine in the product. Researchers at the University of California at San Francisco tested the urine of more than 80 adolescent smokers and 20 non-smokers. Mark Rubenstein, the study's lead author, says teens need to be warned that the vapor produced by e-cigarettes is not harmless.
We are finding some of the same chemicals that we see in regular cigarettes in teenagers who are using e-cigarettes. The levels are much lower than in regular cigarettes, but teens should not be exposing themselves to any levels.
He explains that the oils in e-cigarettes, such as propylene glycol and glycerin, which are approved by the Food and Drug Administration, release harmful toxins when exposed to the high temperatures needed to create vapor smoke. Norman Edelman with the American Lung Association says Rubenstein's study should sound an alarm about possibly regulating e-cigarettes, which can be a gateway to traditional smoking. While some localities have laws on the books that limit access, Edelman thinks the FDA should extend rules that restrict the use of tobacco to vape products as well.
And the American Lung Association is rather concerned that the Food and Drug Administration over a year ago announced their intention to promulgate such rules, but have not yet done so.
Rubenstein offers one caveat on e-cigarettes, which are also marketed to adults trying to quit smoking.
We're not saying that adults who are heavy cigarette smokers shouldn't consider these products as a form of harm reduction. We're just saying that kids should not be exposed to these products.
Colorado law prohibits selling tobacco products to people under age 18, and at least two Denver area vape shops report that they don't sell even nicotine-free products to minors. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Monday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.